thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. I am Wole. Supposed to be joined by my homie Will T, but he's running late. Ray Jeezy is out. Subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. It's been a busy week of sports, man. First off, Kobe Bryant's memorial went down. I want to say it was yesterday, and it's crazy. I couldn't watch it. It was too sad for me, man. People who know me, y'all know that I wasn't the biggest Kobe fan. But at the end of the day, man, I respect the dude's craft. I guess I'm in denial, man. I can't believe that Kobe Bryant is gone. I don't want to believe it. I don't watch replays. I don't watch any of that because it when people start to talk about him in the past, it kind of like puts me in that mode like, oh, Kobe is gone. And every time I kind of think about it and I think about his daughter and whatnot, I kind of like, I get to the mode. I'm like, man, I can't believe it. I heard that Michael Jordan had some amazing words to say about Kobe Bryant. Had a great speech. Same with Shaq. I heard a lot of those individuals, had some nice things to say about Kobe. His wife, I heard she was a soldier. I mean, I knew I could definitely not. I couldn't listen to that. Like, that would crush me, man. Be hard to focus. When Kobe passed, that whole like week, I wasn't myself. It was just tough. You know what I mean? You may not like him. You may not, you may not personally been your cup of tea, but you respected that man's grind and his work ethic to be great. You know what I mean? Like, you don't score 81 points in a game and not have any and not be great. You know what I mean? If you play ball, you know that it's hard to score in any level. It's hard to score 30. It's hard to score 40. But when you put 81 on somebody, you know you're doing a damn thing. So, I mean, RIP Kobe, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to keep saying RIP Kobe. I mean, you left this world too soon. And all the families being affected, that was affected by that tragedy, man. Like, my condolences go out to you all. Obviously, and his daughter too as well, man. But, Kobe, you will always be in everybody's thoughts, man. You know what I'm saying? Mamba mentality lives on. If you're a believer in striving for perfection and striving for greatness, Mamba mentality has to go on in your life, man. Take that in, man. Believe it. You know what I'm saying? That dude was about it. He was about, not having the next person be better than him. And, you had that mentality thinking that, I'm going to outwork the next man. Good things will happen. Also, man, we're going to talk about it, on the show. But, man, Deontay Wilder, man, I've never been the biggest Deontay Wilder fan in terms of boxing skill, but I've always stated that, that one hitter quitter. I mean, that dude has power. One of the best, knockout artists we've seen in a long time. And, I thought he would beat Fury, to be honest. I mean, not thought. I had Fury winning, but I was actually rooting for Deontay because, he's an exciting fighter. But, it just shows that, the boxer, and I don't want to keep going in detail with it because we're going to talk about it, but the boxer always beats the puncher. It is what it is. Will T would normally say this, but he's not in the building, man. Dude running late, hold me. There's Will T. Scared me, man. You all right, man? All right, cool, cool. All right. I'll wait for Will T to say, because I can usually say, let's get into, get into our, but I like my man to say this, my homie. Oh, man, hold on, Will. Hold on, I had some. Hold on. Here we go. Wait a minute. All right, Will T. Hold on, it's not wrong. Will T.
Let's get into our tradition, the pregame.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, here's what we have on tap. We'll discuss if the Washington Redskins should target a number one wide receiver at 820. We'll discuss Washington Wizards Bradley Beal's recent scoring onslaught. Candy Waller of Seawall Sports will join the show to discuss this. Spring training is here. At 8:30, we'll talk about the World Series champs, Washington Nationals, possibly moving Trey Turner to a three-hole in the lineup. At 8:40, we'll talk about Washington Capitals superstar Alexander Ovechkin being the second fastest player to 700 goals. WNXT's Capitals insider Ed Frankovic will join the show. Don't do that. You can't do that, bruh. You can't be doing that, man.
What?
Respect the people, man.
Respect the people,
respect the guests.
respect the guests. I have a lot of respect for
Ed. I know. I'm messing with you. Finally, at 8:50, we'll talk about Tyson Fury TKOing Deontay Wilder Saturday night in a mega heavyweight boxing fight. But you want to say something a little bit about that? I talked about it a little bit in the before we really got in it. Just a little bit without getting everybody.
Biggest
what you want
fight
to talk about.
20 years for a heavyweight. In the heavyweight division, mm-hmm. The fight didn't live up to, the expectation of the people.
On what side, though, right? Wouldn't blame Fury for that, right?
No, I wouldn't blame Fury for it.
Okay. All right. We'll get into it, but I know what you're talking about, though. All right. Last year, Terry McLaurin was the Redskins' number one wide receiver. And seemed legit. McLaurin had 58 catches for 919 yards and 7 touchdowns in 14 games. Do you view Terry McLaurin as a legit number one wide receiver?
Yes. Why wouldn't you? Came in as a third round pick. Mm-hmm. Almost had 1,000 yards receiving, 7 touchdowns, with inconsistency at the quarterback position. Going into year two, he'll have the opportunity to play 16 games with his former college teammate, who's the quarterback. And he'll also develop. He'll go into the offseason knowing some things that he has to work on that were weaknesses for him his first year as a pro. So, absolutely, I think you consider him the number one going into the year. Mm-hmm. And then you try to surround him with additional talent that can help take his game over the top.
It's cool. I mean, that's a good point. It's funny because, you're the second person who said this. I've looked at Terry McLaurin as a guy that is a number one caliber wide receiver, but you're going to put a lot of pressure on him in year two to kind of be the guy. They're going to have to bring more talent. And I was like, man, maybe they should just bring an experienced number one wide receiver to help him out. Because, putting all that on his plate, that's a lot for a year two player. And knowing how the NFL adjusts, right? The NFL does adjust to one skill set. And then we was hanging out with somebody on Saturday. And this person stated that, like, he, against the Detroit Lions, he abused Slay. And Slay is one of the better cornerbacks in football, right? With his route running. And I was like, well, if you can beat Darius Slay, a guy that plays man-to-man defense, is one of the better cornerbacks in football, then yeah, you're number one wide. As a rookie, you're deemed the number one wide receiver. And to your point, Will's, like, the inconsistency at the quarterback position hindered his stats.
Absolutely. The inconsistency during the last season hindered his development, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now he comes into year two with Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins knows the things he needs to work on. Terry McLaurin knows the things he needs to work on. Now, it's a new offense.
Yeah, there it is.
So there's always that learning curve. But I definitely think you view Terry McLaurin going into the 2020 season as your number one. You don't bring in a guy who's a number one and kind of stunt his growth.
Good point. Good point.
Right? You bring a guy in who complements the things that he does, right? Mm-hmm. So, and like I said, I didn't watch a lot of Washington football games last year, but I know what I saw what he was capable of doing when I did watch. Mm-hmm. So maybe you bring a guy on the other side who's a burner, who can get downfield, or maybe a bigger possession receiver, right? One of those two things, and you also bring a tight end that, makes the linebackers sync up some in zone coverage.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a lot of things you could do to help this offense and help Terry McLaurin out and Dwayne Haskins, but you keep him as your number one. You say, all right, this is the guy we're going to groom. For once, we've drafted a guy at the wide receiver position. We got it right. Let's not F this up. Let's grow his skill set.
You hear a lot. There's a lot of talk now that, Stephon Diggs wants out of Minnesota. He's not a veteran wide receiver. But a veteran number one wide receiver, but he is legitimately a number one. There's been his brother tweeted something not too long ago about him coming to DC. That's his brother. So his brother who now plays for Alabama, who looks like he's going to be a first round pick at the cornerback position. Would that be a good fit having Stephon Diggs with McLaurin? Would that be something, or is that too much to your point? What you're saying?
No, I mean, look, depending on how you want to shape this offense, if you want an offense where you're throwing the ball 30 times, you know, where you can get Terry McLuhan the ball seven times, mm-hmm. At least seven times a game, and get Stephon Diggs the ball seven times a game, it's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I do think that Stephon Diggs is a guy who's built similar to Terry McLaurin,
yeah.
And they can learn a lot from each other, and they can play off of each other. But why give up that draft asset to bring in Stephon Diggs when you have guy that you can develop and could potentially be on the same level of Stephon Diggs?
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't, to me, it doesn't make sense.
No, that's a good point. It's all about collateral, right? You don't want to give up collateral if you have a guy that could be a number one that could make the other guys look better, right?
Absolutely.
Because if he's the number one, he should make the other wide receivers look
Absolutely.
Better.
Absolutely.
On Twitter, posed a question about should the Skins bring in another number one, a more experienced number one wide receiver. At Johnny Local tweeted, nope, just a number one and a number two tight end plus a vet wide receiver.
A number two tight end.
Yeah, no.
You need two tight ends. Yeah. You don't need a number two. You need two tight ends.
Number one and just a number one. Yeah, just number after you said.
Nah.
Maybe I'm reading it wrong. I don't know. Yeah. I could be reading it wrong.
Okay.
Because she said nope first, but it says it's like number one and number two tight end. You see this? I'm not going crazy, am I?
Yeah, and a number two tight end.
Yeah. They need a tight end. no one, no two. Is that what you're saying? No one, number two. It's period, though. Right?
Yeah. No, they need two tight ends.
They need two tight ends.
They need two tight ends with them releasing Jordan Reed and with Vernon Davis retiring.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. This is always the most interesting part of this football team's year.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
New coach, new front office structure,
mm-hmm.
very high draft pick,
mm-hmm.
some money to blow.
We'll see what's going to happen.
Yeah,
they haven't spent money in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, they haven't really. This is the thing that they released a lot of players. They have a lot of money under the cap. You know, in years past, before Shanahan, right,
mm-hmm.
they spent.
Yeah.
But they spent.
This was always one of the most exciting times of the year.
Yeah.
For this team.
We'll see. I mean, under Rivera, will they go back to that formula of like, okay, let's spend the money to bring the players that we need in? You know, so, or, you know, but it could be an opportunity to, like you said, will to groom your talent. Nick, on our Facebook page, posted the same question. Nikki Carter posted, nope, they just need a beast.
Those aren't readily available.
Available, you know, in free agency, right?
No.
I mean, actually, a player that I think I would like for them to get if he doesn't stay in Cincinnati is AJ Green. I love AJ Green. I think that's a route runner.
I don't think AJ Green is going anywhere.
Me either. But I'm saying though, if he became available, that's mm-hmm. a guy that I think. To your point, I think that's a guy that takes pressure on Terry McLaurin. He can still do his thing, and that's a big body and a route runner. That's just an overall wide receiver, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's another guy who could potentially hit the free agent market coming from Kansas City, Sammy Watkins.
Sammy Watkins, that's true.
Now, you know,
speed,
mm-hmm. big body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you don't go crazy and pay Sammy Watkins $15, $16 million a year.
Yeah.
But if you can find a nice price point,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he's comfortable and you're comfortable, then you definitely think about bringing him in.
No, I think Sammy Watkins, I mean, I've always been a fan of Sammy Watkins. I think that if Sammy ever was in a situation like he wasn't, you know, any flourished in Kansas City and also with the Rams as well, when he has a quarterback that can or offensive system that's geared to passing the football, Sammy's as an effective wide receiver.
Yeah. When Sammy Watkins doesn't have to shoulder the burden of being a true number one.
Yeah.
He's a good.
Yeah, but you, I mean, even that though, for real, like in Buffalo, when he was in Buffalo, it was like, who was really throwing in the ball? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I understand.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, who was, you know, while you may have not had the best quarterbacks in the other, like he came out with OBJ, right? May have not had the best quarterbacks in the world. I mean, Eli may have not been the best quarterback in the world, but he was a throwing quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, he was airing it out. He was giving his wide receiver an opportunity to make a play. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. Sammy went to the Rams. He got an opportunity to make plays because obviously, you know, McVay and his offense, it lends you for explosive plays. It puts you out there for explosive plays. And then, I mean, we all know about Kansas City. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that kid Mahomes in that arm, he makes plays. You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene. So if the Skins don't make a play, make any moves at wide receiver, do they have what it takes in house to help out McLaurin with some of the young players that they have at wide receiver?
It'll be interesting to see, you know, Steven Sims Jr., mm-hmm. Cam Sims, and then
Kelvin Harmon.
So you have a young receiving core. You have a young quarterback. I wouldn't be opposed to giving it one more year with these guys and, you know, giving Dwayne Haskins a full year and seeing what you could do with that wide receiving core. We, you know, historically we see the teams that are that do well, you know, they draft at the wide receiver position, mm-hmm. they develop, and they don't overspend draft capital on that position or a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
No, yeah, I'm with you. I think that Steven Sims Jr. showed a lot of promise. He only started, I want to say, how many games is Steve? Two starts. And he had about 310 yards. And we saw a lot of explosive plays by Steven Sims Jr., right? He played special teams. He showed you what he can do special teams. But once he got the opportunity to play in the slot when Trey Quinn went down, you saw more explosive plays by that kid. I think that Steven Sims Jr., in this offense, could be a guy because he has elite speed. A guy that, I mean, I may compare him, but not really on the same level. You can use him in the Tyreek Hill type of role without being Tyreek Hill, because, you know, Tyreek Hill, his speed is something totally different. But Steven Sims Jr. has elite level speed. It ain't Tyreek Hill speed, but it's elite level speed, and you can find ways to kind of utilize that in your offense because speed is speed.
I forgot to add his name, Trey Quinn.
Yeah, Trey Quinn.
Yeah, so you have like four or five young wide receivers.
I'm not the biggest Trey Quinn fan. Well, but yeah, I know what you're saying. You're right, though. I mean, they're young.
They're young, and you can develop them. Mm-hmm. And the best thing is you're developing them to do them to play the game the way you want them
agree.
To play.
No, I totally agree. All right. Is Bradley Beal putting out empty stats? Candy Waller from Seawall Sports will join the show to discuss this after the break. You're listening to Urban Sports Lane.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Ooh. Nylon, couple 5 minutes. Whoa, we up too hot in the business. Ooh. About to make a movie independent. Ooh. Need new trucks independent. Ooh. I need you to listen to the vision. Ooh. All your verses sound like dirty dishes. Ooh. I'm about to clean them in the kitchen. Ooh. And we making money by the minute. Ooh. I'm about to do a way different. God. I am just an icon living.
I am just an icon living. Icon living. I am just an icon living. I am
not a Mayan, I'm a menace. It's wild, you can lie like a professor. I don't got the time to put you on a stretcher. I am here and I still flesh. I am just an icon living. Start a record label, Miss Fish just did it. Whoa, I'm high star, cover 5 minutes. Whoa.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Wole, Will T, Ray Jeezy's out. You like that joint? I'm an icon living. You know what I'm
Jalen
saying?
Jalen Smith.
Jalen. Look at Will's face. He's like, nah, I'm like, you ain't like it when you heard it on Creed. You ain't like it on Creed, though. You weren't a fan of it?
I'm not going to say I wasn't a fan of it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's Jalen.
All right, I got you, man. Right now.
Jalen Smith.
Right now, we have Candy Waller from Seawall Sports. She's new to the Urban Sports Scene fan. What's up, Candy?
What's going on, y'all?
Everything's good.
Everything's good. How you doing, Candy?
I'm doing great.
That's good. I love your energy. Love your energy.
Hold on, Candy. Hold on, Candy. Hold on.
Technical difficulties.
Not Candy's all. It's all on me.
Yeah, it's all on our end.
Yeah, hold on.
You know, once Wally is able to fix the connection, we'll have Candy
Candy, can you hear me?
From Seawall Sports.
Yeah, I can hear you.
All right, perfect. I got you. I got you. All right. So, Candy, first off, you know, before we get into, like, the Bradley Beal discussion, can you let our listeners know about Seawall Sports and what you got going on with it?
Absolutely. So, Seawall Sports and Entertainment is a sports media outlet that covers professional, collegiate, and youth sports all throughout the DMV. So mostly social media platforms. We can be found at Seawall Sports and Entertainment on Facebook, at Seawall Sports on Instagram, and at Seawall SE on Twitter. But everywhere the games are going on, you will see a Seawall Sports team member in the building. So we're constantly building. We're constantly building the brand. And I'm a home team girl. I'm a home team girl, born and raised in Prince George's County. So being at the games around here and covering all the area sports, that's home. So
yeah, I'm saying Candy at the Skins game. You know what I mean? She keeps it real. She keeps it 100. All right, and I saw her in some wizard games. I know it's hard being a Wizards games and Skins games because there's a bunch of, you know, L's happening left and right.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's a challenge.
It is. Hey, so I mean when I have a guest, I like to do some research. You know, I saw that you put up one of the gang signs. I call it gang sign because my sister's in one too. You a Delta?
Yes, I am a member of the most illustrious sorority that there is, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated.
It's crazy. I know nothing but Deltas, man. I swear. Like all I know when it comes to girls, I know nothing but Deltas. I know about a couple.
Well, that's
AKs.
A good thing.
I know, right? I have my cousins a Delta, my sister's a Delta. You know, Wilty Angie's a Delta.
Oh, okay.
I know nothing but Deltas, man. I tell you. All right, so let's get down to some serious business. All right, Ken. Last night, Bradley Beal dropped 55 against the Milwaukee Bucks. He dropped 53 on the prior night against the Bulls. He's the first dude since the late great Kobe Bryant to drop 50 back to back. How good is Bradley Beal?
Bradley Beal is as advertised. Mm-hmm. I've been a Bradley Beal fan, and those listeners who are joining tonight and that know me know I have been a Bradley Beal fan since he was at Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I was very excited when the Wizards drafted him. Of course, you know, Beal was ailed, you know, very early on in his career with injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So you know how that goes. But I still saw and knew all the potential that he had. So the Beal that we're all seeing is the Beal that I truly believe that he could be.
Mm-hmm.
And right now he's doing this without a support system. Like, he's the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. You know?
I'm
thoroughly impressed, but I always knew we could see that Beal here in a Wizards shirt. Like, he didn't have to go somewhere else to be that deal. I feel like he could be exactly who he is and who we've seen the last two nights, the whole time.
Hey, Will T, how good you think Beal is, man?
I'm asking Will.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He at least deserved to have been an All-Star this year.
Also, hey, so Candy, you think he should have been an All-Star? Are you on that boat too?
I definitely think he should have been an All-Star. I hear everyone who says, you know, well, the Wizards are losing, so that's why he's not an All-Star. And I'm like, okay, well, Brad doesn't have control over the roster.
Yeah,
but
true.
I mean, I understand why he wasn't, but I do believe that he did his stuff.
No, I'm with you on that. I understand that he wasn't an All-Star.
I don't understand why.
See, I understand his gripe though. It's like I mm-hmm. see both sides of the argument when it comes to Bradley Beal. My only thing about it is like I say when I say about Devin Booker, who I do, and I'm a big Devin Booker fan, but it's like when certain dudes drop 50, your squads ain't losing. You know what I mean? And I get what you're saying because I remember I remember having this argument about back. Like three, four years ago when the whole the debate was about Russell Wilson and James Harden, about who should be MVP, right?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I was mm-hmm. like, all right, y'all, look at that. I was like, look at that Houston Rockets squad. And they ain't that talented. But James Harden is dropping you 40, 50, and they are winning games at a high level. So sometimes mm-hmm. to me, when you drop 50 You know what I'm saying? There's a different 50. Like, you're really taking over the game. Like, you are uplifting your whole squad. And so, and I get what, I mean, for me with Bill, like, I always say Bill is improved. So I'm on this side. Like, when coming into it, I used to be like, when Bill got into the league, I was like, man, Bill don't got no dribble. Like, I mean, he's supposed to be the shooter, and his shooting is all right, but it ain't nothing special. But then almost every year, the dude has gotten better. So, like, Bill is in terms of basketball, when we grade a basketball player or any athlete, he's gotten better every year. But what I want to see from Bradley Bill is I want his play to give you W's. Like, I want it to be impactful down the stretch. I want it to be impactful, impactful in tough situations. Because sometimes you can have 50, but they could be that crucial point in the game where you're not making the right play.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to go back to your point a moment ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've watched Bill evolve.
Yeah, agreed.
Like you said, he's gotten better every year. We've seen that with our own eyes. I think what's going to happen, because as a player, individual player, I mean, what we've seen the last couple of nights, we couldn't ask for Bill to do anymore.
I agree.
Right? But it's how then do you make the other players rise to the occasion?
Mm-hmm.
How then does everybody else, you know, rise up to that moment? And that's the part, honestly, where I haven't even figured it out yet. You know, this is like, does he really not have any help? Or are these players not being tapped into in their strengths where they are able to deliver night after night? You know, not exactly like how Brad does, because I'm not saying that everybody's supposed to get, you know, over 30 points every night, but he's got to get some help somewhere. He has to.
Go, Will.
Well, and we had this discussion last time. For me, there, you know, when you are scoring 50, 40 points on a team with the, let's be honest, with the lack of talent, NBA talent that the Wizards have, that says something about you as a player, right? So to me, it's not 50 empty points. Those are points that the team needs to be competitive in a game, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when you or anyone else says, you know, I'm pretty sure this is how you feel, because we've had this conversation.
Yeah,
so when you say 50 empty points, and when the defensive game plan is tailored towards you, that just goes to show you just how good this player is.
Let me clear this up. I'm gonna clear this up about myself, because I know where this is going when it comes to me. Anytime a baller gives you 50, it's tough. It's tough. You're like Kobe getting 80. I used to joke that Kobe, when he got 81, like, Kobe ain't passing. You mean, of course you can get 87 points, but that's tough. You know what I mean? That is tough to get 50 or 50 plus. My thing about in terms of Wizards roster, it's not, I think they have talent to a certain extent. I don't think they have maximum talent. I think they have some talent, but I don't think that's on Bradley Beal. That could be a whole different discussion about Scott Brooks, what I think about Scott Brooks. That could be a whole different discussion. But I think it's a little bit of both when I talk about, I mean, I don't want to say empty too, because 50 is 50. Like, come on now, 50 is 50.
Yeah.
But to a certain extent, I think that, and you watch, we all, and you, and Ken, you watch games with Bradley Beal. There are times where you need him to make the right play at that time. He can go good, but he doesn't make the right play at a certain time. You just want, you know, your star player at a certain time, at that particular time, clutch time, to make the right play. You know what I mean? Because we've seen that over the years with LeBron. Like, we saw LeBron in the NBA Finals. He didn't make the right play, and they lost to the Dallas Mavericks. And we criticized. Right. We crucified him. You know what I mean? So it's the same thing with Bill. It's a maturation process. He's just going to have to eventually get used to making the right play down the stretch. Because, you know, my argument has always been with the Wizards, and I've always said this, like, when Wall is healthy, like, this squad makes the right play. Just my opinion.
Not all the time.
not all the time, but most of the time.
Because John Wall does
take the bad jump shot.
He takes bad jump shots, and he also gets himself in trouble by jumping in the air.
I agree. That's true. All right, so Candy, I know I've done a lot of John Wall, Bradley Beal, but pretty much I'm not a Bradley Beal basher. I want you to think that I'm a Bradley Beal basher. I like Bradley Beal. I love improvement, you know what I'm saying? And Beal is definitely improved. So, but Candy, before I let you go, again, let our listeners know about, you know, Seawall Sports Entertainment, and also what you got going on, what you got popping, anything, podcast, let it all be known now.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So every Thursday at 7:30 on the Seawall Sports and Entertainment Facebook page, I do a show called Coaching from the Couch. It is live streaming. stream. We talk all things DMV sports. This week we'll have the folks from the Huddle Show on, and so we'll be doing an entire recap of everything that's going on in high school basketball right now. We know there's a lot going on, all types of championship awesome. Games, so we're doing the whole rundown of that. But that's every single Thursday at 7:30, and there'll be more to come from a show perspective. Other than that, just keep following the pages, Seawall Sports and Entertainment on Facebook, at Seawall Sports on Instagram, and at Seawall SE on Twitter to get all of the latest and greatest sports news in the DMV.
Oh, I love it. Hey, Candy, thanks for being on. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Candy. We appreciate you.
Thank y'all so much.
All right. Anytime, anytime. All right. I told you I'm going to get you on for some skins talk, all right? I'm not going to do with the
all
Wizards.
Cool.
I need some skins talk.
All right.
Bye. All right. That is Candy. That is Candy Waller from C Sports and Entertainment. Make sure you check her out.
All right. Yeah. Loved her energy.
Yeah.
Look forward to having her back.
Oh, we definitely will, man. All right. Nationals, Trey Turner in the three hole? We'll discuss this after the break of the Stir Up a Sports Lane.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
What are you trying to do? You're not supposed to light it on fire.
My sentence for committing no crime
and bad mistakes.
I've made a few.
I've had my shares
and
kicked
in my face,
but I come through.
We go on.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, and Will T. Ray Jeezy is out. The Nats are the champions, right, Will T? No time for losers because they are the champions. Even with cheaters out there, they are the champions.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So,
defending champions.
Defending champions. Can they go back to back? We'll see. All right, spring training has started up for the World Series chance. Washington Nationals, they have experimented with Trey Turner hitting in a three-hole. Would this be a good move for the Nats?
Absolutely it would.
Okay. Ooh, okay. Go ahead. Tell me
So here's the thing. A couple of things have to happen, though, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. We need Victor Robles to be more patient at the plate.
So at leadoff?
At leadoff.
Okay.
But losing Rendon.
Oh, man, it hurt.
Hurts. Rendon was a professional. Like, he's a hitter's hitter, mm-hmm, right? You know, the Nationals have been fortunate that over the last 7 years, because you had Daniel Murphy, and then, you know, Rendon consistently got better, and mm-hmm, then until last year when he was an MVP candidate,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if Trey Turner, a guy who possesses power, possesses one of the fastest players in MLB, if you can get him in the three position with Juan Soto right behind him, it makes it very...
You mean Soto hitting cleanup?
Yeah.
Okay, it's fine. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. If that top four is imposing, right?
Yeah.
Where Victor Robles' speed, Adam Eaton's ability to get on base, then you have Trey Turner who can hit for speed and for power, and mm-hmm, then you have Juan Soto. That's as far as top four hitters in the NL.
Yeah.
That's formidable.
Yeah, it is.
It's a very formidable lineup.
Yes.
And then you also take into consideration you'll have Starlin Castro, Ezrubel Cabrera. You can deploy Eric Thames, Ryan Zimmerman, Howie Kendricks.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't that bad. It's not last year's lineup.
Yeah.
But it isn't that bad of a lineup.
It's not the worst lineup.
Worst lineup in the world.
I wouldn't have him hit at the third spot. I think the leadoff. It's just so scary at leadoff. I mean, but you're saying like Robles is more suited being the three hitter, because he doesn't set the table well. But he is a guy that has power, and he's a guy that swings for fences. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So we saw that with him, which is cool. Down in the clutch, Robles had a lot of big home runs, you know, in the late innings. You kind of want that mentality. A guy that you did mention, I think that would be interesting, that could probably hit three, but it would be like a resurgence year for him because he has the ability to, is Starlin Castro. I think he's a guy that has the ability, if he's going good, can do that.
That's a guy who I'm telling everyone, watch out for, because yeah. it's not going to be if he has a good year, when he has a good year, and he's going to, and when he reaches that potential that everyone thought he had when he was younger,
I think
this is a year that you definitely say, people going to definitely say, like, that Starlin Castro addition was a great addition for this team.
I mean, if you watch, I mean, I'm an Orioles fan, and I watched him when he went to the Yankees.
And you said that proudly, too.
You already know. I'm still an Orioles fan. But you see, when Castro was with the Yankees, excuse me, he was lights out. I know that ballpark is a little, can manipulate home runs and whatnot, but still at the same time, he was lights out. And to me, with the Yankees, he reached his potential. Like, he was a hard out, man. You know what I'm saying? He was a hard out. And if you have, to your point, Will T, if he has Castro is hitting third and he has Soto as protection, he's getting fastballs because no one's going to want to walk him to get the Soto.
Yep,
he's getting fastballs.
Not.
Eaton, we all know that Eaton can set the table with the best of them. So you got Eaton, Turner, right? Table setters. Castro, so he has men on base. He's going to get fastballs because who? They're scared of who? Soto. You know what I mean? So that's a beast. That's a formidable top four right there too as well. But I always mention Robles because Robles has superstar ability and potential. But this is the year for Robles to definitely show it. He's gonna have to show in the spring so Davey can have trust in him.
I totally agree with you. But if Victor Robles, like I said, this is all dependent upon Victor Robles maturing. Becoming a more patient hitter.
No, I agree.
But if Victor Robles isn't able to take that leadoff spot, then you definitely have to put Trey Turner back in the leadoff position.
Yeah, I agree. No, I totally agree. Post this question on Facebook in the Washington Nationals fan group. Shahzad Mirza. Posted, no, I don't like the move. The guy gets steals. Don't get cute and bat him first. I mean, I understand the problem. Like, he gets a lot of steals. I mean, Turner is elite. He's an elite leadoff guy because he can get, basically to me, he's the best base stealer in baseball. He's the scariest.
I'm not going to say the best.
I think he's one of the best.
He's one of the best.
Let me say one of the best. Robert Harris said, no, he's one of the best leadoff hitters in MLB. Don't fool with a winning 1-2. All right. This is a good one. This is one actually different.
What I think people fail to take into consideration is, yes, he's one of the top leadoff hitters, but he was one of the top leadoff hitters when you had Anthony Rendon
in the number three
spot. So you the way that managers are going to pitch to the top of that lineup without Anthony Rendon at the number three spot is going to be totally different.
No, I agree. It's going to be totally different. Carl Edward posted, if Eaton and Robles can get on base, then Turner is suited to the third spot more than they are. He was decent. He has decent power, and he's always looking to drive the ball. So he may enjoy the third spot more than leadoff.
My opinion is biased. So, you know. I agree with the last Facebook poster.
Yeah. No, I think everybody has solid and valid points. I think the third spot could be interchangeable, to be honest with you.
Depending upon the matchup. That's fair. Yeah. Depending upon the matchup, yeah, it can be.
And you saw it. The Royals showed you don't always have to have traditional, you know, four hitters start the lineup. You know what I mean? Like everyone thinks your third hitter has to be like a home run powerful hitter, like a 40 home run, a 40 plus hitter. It doesn't. You don't have to have that. You
know
what
I mean? It's good to have a guy who can hit for average and a guy who has some speed.
Yeah. And I mean, and Rendon showed you a different route at the third spot. A guy that wasn't trying to swing for the fences. He would take a walk. He would, you know, he tried to make contact. He wasn't striking out. He tried to make contact. So, I mean, I like what the Nats are doing. I like the direction of the Nats. I like that, you know, they have versatility. Again, I'm with you, Will T. I think Starlin Castro could be the steal of the whole offseason because, you know, no one's really expecting a lot out of him. But he has the ability with that lineup to be special. I agree with you. All right, cool. So Ovi has reached 700 goals. We'll talk about the Great Eight and the Caps with WNST's Caps insider Ed Frankovic after the break. You're listening to the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Listening to the Urban Sports Scene with Will T and myself, Wole, man. Ovechkin may be the world's greatest. See what I did with that? You didn't hear the song? That was R. Kelly, world's greatest. Ovechkin may be the world's greatest.
You still playing R. Kelly?
I knew you were going to say something.
You're not woke.
Man, Gail winning right now. I ain't paying no mind to that. We had NXT's Capitals insider Ed Frankovic on the line. What's up, Ed?
Hey, Urban Sports Scene. It's good to be back. How are you guys?
Everything's great. Good to have you, Ed.
We're doing great. Thanks for jumping on the phone for us, Ed.
Anytime. You know, we have big stuff happening, right? OB 700. He's already 701, scored again tonight.
He scored tonight? Ooh!
He scored already. They're up 3-0. Kovalchuk coming to the Caps is certainly a big deal, because I think he's going to get a lot of those Russian guys to really dial in, especially Kuznetsov, who looks like a different player tonight. Looks like the guy from 2018. Clearly motivated to try and get his Russian friend a cup. So I think this Kovalchuk acquisition is going to really help.
Ed, you mentioned that the Caps are up tonight. Do you think that the Caps were pressing to help Ovi get that 700th goal, and that's why we saw over the previous two games, we saw lackluster play, but them pressing and not the level of consistency that we saw from the Caps throughout the beginning of the season?
I think they were forcing the puck to him a bit, but you can say lackluster, because they were lackluster against Montreal and New Jersey. There's no two ways about it. They played lousy hockey. They were not dialed in. They were not very good. And then against Pittsburgh on Sunday, you saw they got some intensity and some fire back. Mm-hmm. And now I think this acquisition with Kovalchuk really helped. But the biggest problem's been the defense. They have not been paying attention to their own zone. They had some problems on the blue line. And bringing in Brendan Dillon from San Jose was a great move, something I really wanted. Mm-hmm. And he stabilized it. But I think the Kovalchuk going to the third line will help that line. But I think the bigger thing is he's going to motivate the guys. I think he's going to bring that room together, and I think they're going to be a lot better team. And I saw a little bit of the game tonight already at my son's hockey practice, and you could just see they look like a different team.
So I was going to go to talk about, you know, Ovi's, you know, 700th goal on Saturday, but I want to go to Kovalchuk. You know, he got traded from, you know, Montreal Canadiens, for a third round pick for 2020. What you mentioned a little bit, but what is he really bring? What is he bringing to the table? Because, you know, he used to be a 50 goal scorer in 2005, 2006, and 2007, 2008 season. But what is he bringing? He's 36 years old. What is he bringing to the table now? Other than being like Ovi's guy from Russia.
Well, he was the number one pick in the draft. I think it was 2002 or mm-hmm. somewhere way back there. And he was you know, the best player out coming out of Russia, and was mm-hmm. a great player. He went back to Russia for a few years. Remember, he got traded to New Jersey. Mm-hmm. They went to the Stanley Cup Finals, and then he decided to go back to Russia and play. So there were talks about attitude and, you know, Jaromir Jagr went through this in the middle of his career and came back, was a different guy. And I guess Kovalchuk came back to the Kings and it just didn't work out there. But all the reports out of Montreal was this guy was great there. They loved him there. He played hard. He did what he could for the team. What's he going to bring to the Caps? The Caps badly need a wing on that third line that can score.
Yeah.
Richard Ponick was not coming anywhere close to filling the shoes of Brett Connolly or Andre Burakovsky. Mm. And Kovalchuk can put the puck in the net. And that bumps Ponick down to the fourth line. Brendan Leafs has been absolutely horrible for 2 months. He needs to come out. So it gives him a way better balance in the lines. But to me, still, the biggest thing is
defense.
You get Kuznetsov back. Mm-hmm. Kuznetsov has not looked like he's been motivated. He has not looked like a guy who wants to play. And I liken this to when Sergei Fedorov came over in 2008 at the deadline, yeah, and all of a sudden Alex Seven became a great player again.
I remember that.
So I think this is the bump in the room that they really need in Kovalchuk. That's the biggest thing he's going to bring. But he's also going to be really good in that third line, and he's also going to be very good on the second power play.
Yeah. So, but do you think that? Hold on. Do you think that I'm sorry, I had an interruption. Do you think that the defense, like you talked about the defense, and that was my thing. I don't think like in terms of the offense that's been an issue. I feel like the defense has been an issue.
Yeah, the team defense has been terrible, and the blue line is having all kinds of troubles with breakouts. They're moving the puck, making wrong reads. Mm-hmm. And part of that also was the forwards. The forwards were not back checking like we saw under Barry Trotz, right? They were not coming back and putting that back pressure. So their team defense, the general manager Brian McClellan called them out, said, our team defense, and it's not just the D, but it's the forwards too. But the biggest problems were on the blue line, and, mm-hmm, and the Brendan Dillon acquisition helped that. Okay. But they got to get the forwards involved too. It's five. You got to have five guys all committed, and they were not committed for a couple months.
Okay. All right, let's go to – I want to go to Ovi's 700th goal on Saturday. Like, this is the fastest since the great one, Wayne Gretzky. Like, the Gretzky's the first. Ovi's the second fastest to 700. Like, how special is this accomplishment? I don't think, we talk about it, other accomplishments in sports, but Wayne Gretzky, like the great one, Ovi is the second fastest since him. What does that put him in terms of his legacy?
Well, I think Ovi's the greatest goal scorer ever. I mean, when Gretzky scored all his goals, a lot of them were in the 80s before the goaltending was really good. The goaltending was not – the butterfly hadn't been perfected. The equipment was a lot less on the goalies. I watched Gretzky a lot in the 80s. I think he's the greatest hockey player ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think Alex Ovechkin's the greatest goal scorer ever.
Wow.
I've never seen anybody with the ability of Alex Ovechkin to get a shot off of any type of angle – any type of place, the ability to get off quick and hard. He shoots through guys at times. That's how powerful his shot is. I just haven't seen anybody that can score goals like Ovi. I don't know if he's going to make it to Gretzky's record. I'd say it's 50-50 right now.
Yeah.
The goal scoring has definitely opened up in the league.
Yeah.
And that's to his advantage. And, as long as he keeps himself in good condition, and he's got kid number two on the way now, and I think he's done a pretty good job with that. Being focused, dialed in with his training regimen. We're talking what? He's at 701, so he needs 193 to tie. I think Wayne was 894.
Mm.
So you're talking 5 years at 40, right?
Yeah.
That's not easy. Because he's 35 now, Ovi? So you're going to have to keep himself in good shape and continuing to score. So it's going to be hard. I put it at 50-50, but I still say he's the greatest goal scorer of all time.
It's funny. Folks doubted Ovi. Like a couple years ago, he was done. And look at him now. I don't want to doubt Ovi. I think, he's motivated. And, people keep thinking he's going to slow down. He hasn't yet.
No, he's definitely motivated for sure, guys. And Barry Trotz went and visited him that one summer, 2017 summer, and they talked. And Ovi talked about changing his training habits to get faster, get that step back. And he's got it back. He's definitely a lot faster than he was. And you look at it since then. He's ripped off, 49, 50. And, he's going to probably hit 50 again this year.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Hey, Ed, thanks. Hey, thanks for being on. Ed, before I let you go, let our listeners know how they can catch you on social media. Will, you wanted to say something? I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say thanks, Ed.
Right. You can find me at @EdFrankvic on Twitter. And not a whole lot of WNSD .net lately, but you can make sure you tune in to Urban Sports Scene, because you never know what I'm going to be.
Hey, we're going to have you on. And Will T, wanted to say something? Sorry.
No, I was just going to say thanks, Ed, for taking the time to jump on.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for coming. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, thank you, Ed.
Bye.
Bye.
Anytime, Wally and Ray. You guys be good.
All right. Oh, Ed. That's Ed Frankovic for WNXT's The Capitals Insider. Ed's great, man. Good guy. He always gives us good Caps insight. Sorry about that background. Y'all heard it. You know, y'all have people
I don't
out
know
here.
What you're talking about.
Thanks, man. Thanks, you. Thank you. Will, teach you. Tap me up, man. You always got my back. My man.
I don't know what you're talking about.
My man. Hey, I wish, you know who had somebody's back? And he's not really showing appreciative. He's not appreciative of the situation. Like Deontay Wilder's trainer had his back. And I'm not a fan of what he's talking about. Tyson Fury is the king of the heavyweight division. Will T and I will talk about how he dismantled Deontay Wilder. Bomb Squad Saturday night after break. You listen to Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
You're listening to the Urban Sports Scene with myself, Ole, Will T, Ray, Jeezy's out. Saturday night at the MGM in Las Vegas, last Saturday night, Tyson Fury retained the lineal heavyweight championship and became the WBC heavyweight champion by TKOing Deontay Wilder in the seventh round. Your thoughts on the fight, Will T?
Deontay Wilder never recovered from that first knockdown.
Yeah, we saw him.
You obviously could tell his legs was gone, were gone, and his equilibrium was shaking. Mm-hmm. Right. Some people are saying that it was an illegal punch behind the head. You know, I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to argue the
merit.
It's fair
though.
It's a fair point. You know, but what people can harp on that, or they can give Tyson Fury the credit that he deserves. Mm-hmm. Right. Tyson Fury told everyone, I'm coming straight forward, and I'm going to stay in his face, and I'm going to push him back. And I'm going to box him, and I'm going to let him feel my power, and I'm going to use my weight advantage. He did everything that he said he would do, plus more, outside of knocking him out in the second round, which he predicted he would do. But he did knock him down in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fight that was greatly hyped because, you know, the dual promotion between ESPN and also Fox.
Yeah. PBC, right?
Yeah.
Is it still PBC, right?
PBC, yeah. Fox, yeah. You know. But it didn't live up to the hype of the first fight, right?
Yeah,
you know,
of course not, yeah.
You know, when we were talking about the fight last week, I asked our guests.
Johnny Sig,
would this be the 13th round or would this be the first round of a new fight? And, you know, I was hoping for the 13th round of the first fight, but it was clearly the first round of a new fight in the way that Tyson Fury approached the fight with his game plan. And, you know, he did a lot of things well, you know, just feinting, moving, using his range. Whenever Deontay Wilder would kind of load up that right hand, he would always step aside and make and nullify so Deontay Wilder couldn't land with that right hand. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then Tyson Fury also did some things exceptionally well, like using his 6'9" height advantage and his weight against Deontay Wilder. Whenever Deontay Wilder tried to clinch, Tyson Fury would lean into him and make him support all of that weight.
Yeah.
And Deontay Wilder was, I think, 60 pounds lighter than Tyson Fury going into the fight. Tyson Fury fought a great fight. You know, that's just goes to show that making some changes in your team. You know, we know that Tyson Fury changed his trainer for this fight with Sugar Hill Stewart, the late Emmanuel Stewart's nephew, and that's one of the things that made a world of difference.
Yeah, it sure did. It's funny because initially in the fight, though Fury was, you know, showcasing his skills, I actually like what Wilder was doing. I thought he was using his jab more in this fight, in the initial rounds compared to what he did in the first fight. He had some solid shots, bro. I was surprised, you know, that Fury could sustain some of the shots you took, because he used to hit him clean a couple times.
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah. I think there was one. There was a 1-2
yeah.
that he hit him with, I think, or not even a 1-2, I think a straight right hand
yeah, uh-huh.
that he hit him with in the first round.
Yeah, flush.
And Tyson Fury just kind of took it.
He took it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm here for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
We're
I was surprised.
Nowhere.
Yeah.
And that may be the turn in the fight.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
When Deontay Wilder hit him with that straight right and Tyson Fury didn't buckle,
mm-hmm.
didn't go down,
or,
and didn't retreat, it may have mess with Deontay Wilder's head.
No, I agree. When I saw that, I was like, oh, he's here for it. All right, so after the fight, Deontay Wilder made a lot of excuses. He said his outfit was 40-plus pounds, and they affected his legs. Yo, what's up with Wilder, bruh? Like, really?
Look, that's par for the course for most fighters, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they have a loss, especially their first loss,
mm-hmm.
There's always excuses of, you know, I overtrained. I did, you know, I overate the day of the fight.
Yeah.
I didn't hydrate enough.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, I understand, you know, your pride is hurt. And to Deontay Wilder's credit, he did give Tyson Fury the credit he deserved.
Mm-hmm.
In the post-fight interview right after, you know, when I interviewed him in the ring, he said, look, the better man won today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for him to go on and say, you know, I wore 40 pounds, and I don't know if it's an excuse or it may be the truth.
It may be the truth.
But like you said during the break, you had a choice to not wear that 40 pound.
That's what I'm saying.
Outfit.
You had the choice. Like, you knew it was heavy from the get go.
Yeah,
like,
I understand why he wore it in celebration of Black History Month.
That's great.
That's great.
We'll tell the next person you something lighter.
Yeah, but what you want to do is you want to put yourself in the best mental and physical
mm-hmm.
place to win the fight.
Yeah, you don't want to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, and wearing a 40 pound outfit to walk to that for that long of a ring walk
mm-hmm.
just wasn't the best decision, if you ask me.
All right, so Wilder's also upset with his trainer Mark Breland for stopping the fight early in the seventh round. Wilder stated that he wanted to fall on the shield. Do you have an issue with the stoppage? Did you have an issue with the stoppage?
I had no issue with the stoppage at all. Deontay Wilder wasn't defending. Like, he had his hands up, but he wasn't defending himself from the standpoint of throwing punches.
Yeah.
Right? So you were sitting there, you were target practice.
Mm-hmm.
We already saw the blood coming from your ear. Some, you know, I'm pretty sure the corner figured out that it was a cut on the ear.
Yeah.
But for some of us who didn't know, maybe
busted.
Yeah, I thought he busted the eardrum or
something. Yeah, and his mouth was bloody too.
Yeah. So Deontay Wilder was in a condition we've never seen him in
mm-hmm.
in a professional fight. So you know, your corner's responsibility is to put you in the best position to win the fight and also to look out for your best interest and your health long term.
Yeah.
You were taking a lot of shots and not responding back. So I think they did the right thing.
Me too. You know, Deontay was like, I think Deontay stated to a point where, you know, I've always talked about putting somebody out. You know what I mean? So I want to pretty much fall on my own shield. And I'm thinking to myself, like, bro, you got a family, right?
Yeah.
That's my thing. Like, you're being very selfish. Like, your trainer was looking out, because if you're gone, your family's is in mourning, right?
Yeah.
So, bro, like, your trainer looking out. Yeah.
Who's to know the long-term effect if you had stayed up there and taken those shots?
Yeah.
You know, God rest his soul. We saw the long-term effects of taking those headshots, like Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
You know, we see Evander Holyfield.
Yeah,
we see James Toney.
Yeah, seriously.
Right? A lot of guys who've taken, you know, who've entertained us and put their life on the line for our entertainment and for the sport, for the love of it. But we have seen the effects of those shots long term.
Yeah.
I think Mark Breland did the right thing for Deontay Wilder. I think Deontay Wilder's ego and pride is hurt.
Yeah.
But I think if he actually took a moment and thought about what Mark Breland did,
He'd be appreciative. No, I agree. No. I had an issue with fans like, oh, that was an early stop. It's like, bro, like, do you want to, I mean, not to be funny, you watch Rocky and Apollo Creed? Like, if he had fell that way and been like, and we've seen some other tragic situations.
Yeah.
What would you have said? You would have blamed the trainer.
Exactly. Now, having said that, you know, with the game plan and the way that it was executed during the fight, you may want to bring someone else in.
Yeah, that
they
I
can
will.
Bring a different perspective on and help elevate your skill set.
Yeah, that I agree with.
You know, but did Mark Breland do the correct thing? Absolutely, he did the correct thing.
All right, so Fury is now, like I mentioned, Fury is now the king of the heavyweight division, which he stated. Wilder exercised his rematch clause, and Anthony Joshua and his camp stated that they want Fury bad. What's next for the king of the heavyweight division?
Well, he's going to fight Deontay Wilder before the summer, by the summer.
Oh, that's what. So he can't. Okay, so there's no way that Joshua's camp can get it in.
So from my understanding, the contract, the loser has 25 business days or 30 days to call for a rematch, which Deontay Wilder has done.
Mm-hmm.
The splits is already determined 60-40 to the winner.
Okay.
And the fight must happen by the summer.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Now, if they find a way to work out a financial situation where, Tyson Fury doesn't have to fight Deontay Wilder next, cool. But if we're looking at things realistically, Anthony Joshua has two mandatory defenses that he has to make before the year's over. Ooh. So, you know, the dream of us having Fury versus Joshua anytime soon is just not going to happen.
Not going to happen. All right. So this is a question, I guess, in your opinion, because I know you don't because you're a boxing fan. But have most U.S. boxing fans underestimated the skill set and greatness of Fury? Not you, because I think you're a boxing fan. But as fans, that people just automatically thought that Wilder was going to be Fury.
So here's the thing. When we talk about the heavyweight division, we think of one thing, big punchers.
Yeah.
Deontay Wilder was a big puncher. Look, me and you, we both stated on this podcast last week that we thought that Deontay Wilder would win the fight, right?
I thought Fury would win.
Okay, well.
But I was indecisive though.
I was hoping you weren't going to backtrack because I could just say, let's pull up the audio.
Yeah. No, I know it's indecisive.
We all thought that, we went with the big, I went with the big puncher.
Johnny Sig went with Deontay too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't think we underestimated Tyson Fury. I think we more fell in love with a guy with indestructible right hand, with a high knockout rate that we haven't seen in the heavyweight division for years upon years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because we've used to seeing the Klitschko brothers dominate, right? And Lennox Lewis before that.
Yeah.
So, I don't think anyone underestimated. Look, if you saw Tyson Fury fight, then you know that Tyson Fury does a lot of things from a movement standpoint that we haven't seen from a heavyweight since, I don't know. I'm not going to be blasphemous.
I'm not going to say
Muhammad Ali. But I will say.
He's in that mold.
We haven't seen a guy that big move who has the ability to move around.
Yeah,
that
not
way.
Ali, but I know what you're saying. Heavyweights don't move like him.
Larry Holmes.
Yeah,
right.
They don't move
like Larry Holmes.
Yeah,
right. A big guy who can move around.
Definitely in our era of truly watching boxing, he's the most mobile heavyweight we've seen.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So George on Twitter stated, in terms of U.S. boxing fans underestimating Fury, he said guilty. Mike Knott said no, just wanted to hate on him because he was not our champ. I'm not gonna lie, I feel like I underestimated Tyson Fury I underestimated him, because even watching him, I was impressed with him in fight one, and I underestimated him in fight one with Wilder. But what he did, I saw him come in the ring big, I thought he was sloppy. I didn't think he was really ready. After watching fight two initially, like the presentation, I was like, oh yeah, Wilder might get him. He don't, like, he took this thing serious. And after that, after with the outcome of what happened, I was like, yo, I underestimated this dude. Like, and maybe if he was an American boxer, I would think differently, to be honest with you.
I will say this. I'm not going to say I underestimated his skill set. I, I'll say that I underestimated his preparation and the level of competition he had since the last Deontay Wilder fight.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, man. Well, it was a great show. Make sure you subscribe to our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and Google Play. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. Also, tweet us at Urban Sports Scene and hit us up on our Urban Sports Scene Facebook page. Also, I want to thank all of our guests. You all were amazing. We appreciate you.
Deuces.
All right, you've been listening to the Urban Sports Scene.
For ages.
You did.
Deuces.
Hey, Megalita's out, big homie.